This is the Midday 180, queued up by Angeli's Barbecue, with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharsky.
Second hour is here, Midday 180. We're queued up by Angeli's Barbecue. Chad Withrow is in Mount Juliet. Paul Kuharsky's in Brentwood. I'm Jonathan Hutton in Murfreesboro. David Reed is the chairman of the board. Coming up, Titans linebacker David Long will join us in 45 minutes. We'll also hear from Stephen Godfrey and John McClain. But every Friday to kick off the 11 a.m. hour with us, Clay Travis, presented by the Home Loan Expert online, thehomeloanexpert.com. Clay, good morning. Hope you're doing well.
I'm doing well. How are y'all?
Doing great. Curious your thoughts on, from the Major League Baseball perspective, when you consider what has been offered to the players and the players' response, do you side on the players' standpoint and the stance of we're not playing for an 80% salary reduction in some cases? Or do you say this is a sport, we're in the middle of a pandemic, get out on the diamond and play?
I think I'm like most fans, and I don't have much sympathy for billionaires or millionaires here. 40 million people have lost their jobs. Probably 100 million or more have either lost their jobs or have taken substantial pay cuts in the middle of the worst economic crisis, self-inflicted, by the way, in the history of the United States. And so when I look at this, I look at it and say, this seems like something that should just be resolved relatively easily. And what I mean by that is the owner's initial proposal made sense to me. We don't know how much revenue is going to be produced for baseball this year. We don't know how many games are going to be able to be played. We don't know any of that. So to me, the owner saying to the players, hey, we will split 100% of our revenue 50-50 seems eminently reasonable. The owners are likely to still end up losing a lot of money. The players are going to get paid per, based on what their salaries were, but they don't know exactly what the total dollar value is going to be. That seems eminently reasonable to me. What also seems eminently reasonable to me is I just don't understand why they can't say, give them players two options, okay? We are going to pay you a percentage of revenue that's produced this year. Based on what revenue we produce, but we will allow you, if you're making a ton of money, like a Mike Trout, we'll add another year to your contract and not count this one as a part of the contract if you would prefer that. Or if you're a younger guy and you would rather have this year count and work towards free agency, or maybe you're in your final year of your contract and you would rather have that count, whatever it is, we'll give players options. They can either count this year on their contract or they can not count it and defer their compensation down the line and add another year to the contract. That seems eminently reasonable to me as we look forward. And I would say in general, I'm pretty disgusted with Major League Baseball, the NBA, MLS, and even the NHL. Look, the English Premier League and the Bundesliga and the Serie A are all going to be back playing for people who are international soccer fans in European countries by mid-June, okay? That's particularly interesting in Italy and in England because per capita they have nearly doubled the death rate of the United States. Yet those leagues are already back and playing in June. There's no reason why our pro sports teams should not be in training camp right now and ready to play in June.
I agree with you that the owner's proposal seems reasonable. The one counter to that I've heard that I feel is not unreasonable also is this idea, like, I can't remember what MLB bought, the huge stats thing that was a giant windfall, hundreds of millions, if not $1 billion. And MLB did not say, we've got this huge windfall, so let's share the huge windfall. So now they're at a time of crisis, and there's less money coming in, and they're saying, let's find a way to split this loss. But they don't say at a time of a huge gain, let's find a way to split this huge gain. So would you say that's just the nature of life in America, or what's the counter to that, because I do hear players and union hints of, hey, you're asking us to share in the bad, but you'd never say, hey, let's share the good.
Well, first of all, I would say they do share in the good. I mean, and contractually, if you have, you know, a better performance than you thought you would, a lot of people have incentives. And I would say those are two different things. As a business owner, you are entitled to the value that accrues to your business. Much like as a player, if Mike Trout signs a $50 million off-field shoe deal, it's not like he goes back to the team and he says, hey, by the way, one reason why I was able to make so much money from this shoe deal is because I'm a member of the LA Angels or the Anaheim Angels or whatever they're called now. And I'm going to give you some money back because I actually made a lot more money off the field because of you letting me play and represent this team. Like Michael Jordan, to my knowledge, never has gone back to the Bulls and said, hey, thanks for drafting me. I've made billions of dollars potentially off of my shoes that you let me wear by choice on your court, on your television broadcast. I'm going to give more money back to the owners and back to the teams, right? So everybody is in business for themselves, and I understand that. I just think it's particularly a bad look for players to be arguing, we're not going to take less money than we made, that we're entitled to contractually, when almost everybody out there is taking less money. Let me give you an example. The players, regardless, are going to play about half of the games, it appears, under the proposal. So I think making around half of the salary would make sense because you're doing half of the work. I think if most people went out there to their bosses and said, hey, I'm only going to work for half the days this year, it would be they feel like they probably are going to get paid half as much. On top of that, I've got contracts in radio and TV. I took pay cuts. I have contracts. I could have jumped on the table and yelled and said, I refuse to take another dollar less. Because I have a contract that guarantees me my pay is going to be X, Y, or Z, right? I couldn't do that. I haven't done that because I understand that we're in unique financial circumstances and that if I suddenly said on my radio show, for example, you know what, they're not paying me my full salary, I'm not showing up for work, I think my listeners would be upset with me and they would say, well, wait a minute, like, you are just taking your ball basically and going home in the middle of a pandemic. Why should we be there for you in good times when you're not there for us in bad times? And I think that's really what sports fans are saying. Hey, you should be playing baseball. I should be able to sit down on my couch and watch you without fail. And here, we've moved beyond health, right? I don't hear anybody really arguing, oh, it's not safe to play anymore. Because I think that's a tough argument to make when Legoland and Universal Studios Orlando are open down in Florida. It's hard for me to understand why I can go to a Little League baseball game or basketball game in the state of Tennessee with crowds present and watch kids play, and I can't watch a baseball team play with no fans present on television. It's just nonsensical, and I think that's where most fans are right now.
We are queued up by Edley's Barbecue, the 180 and 104.5 The Zone, as we continue with Clay Travis from Outkick the Coverage.
Clay, you had Florida Governor Ron DeSantis on your show this morning. Did you reach out to his office about him joining you, or did they reach out to you?
I've reached out to every populist, you know, because the show is nationwide, every populist governor in the nation to invite them on the show. So Andrew Cuomo of New York, Ron DeSantis of Florida, Governor Abbott of Texas, and Gavin Newsom of California. I've invited them all on the show because I think all of them are instrumental in terms of the return of sports in many ways. I think those are probably the four most significant states in terms of when we're going to get sports back. It's also bipartisan. And so far, Ron DeSantis is the first governor to agree to come on.
Where did Governor DeSantis in Florida get it right, in your opinion, in how to handle this and how they're handling things moving forward?
Well, the biggest story, I believe, that should be being covered and isn't getting as much attention as it deserves, is that around, I think the number is up to 43%, and that's probably a little bit low, of all the deaths from the coronavirus are from nursing homes, or, you know, people of that age living in extended care facilities, however you want to define what a nursing home is. So 0.6%, I believe it is, of the United States population has almost half of all the deaths. And so I think the most fundamentally destructive decision that was made by anyone was the decision by some governors to send coronavirus patients back into nursing homes as opposed to keeping them in hospitals to treat. And that if you look at the data, almost all the rapid spread of death that has occurred has been directly connected to nursing homes. And we've known that since February when the first outbreak started in the state of Washington. So Ron DeSantis on the show this morning talked about the decision that he made to not send the infected patients out of the hospital. And say, why did they do that? They did it because they bought into the models that millions of people were going to die. And Ron DeSantis said he had a model put on his desk that said there were going to be 464,000 people hospitalized with coronavirus at the peak in the state of Florida. The reality, he said, was they peaked at 2,100 patients in the hospital with the coronavirus in the state of Florida. So he had a model put on his desk that told him 464,000 people were going to be hospitalized with the coronavirus. And he said, I don't believe that this model is in any way reality. And so he made the decision not to send infected patients into the nursing homes. And as a result, the death rate in Florida has been much lower than in New York or New Jersey or Michigan or Minnesota or Pennsylvania, all states that made the decision to send infected patients back into nursing homes where it then spread like wildfire. He also said something that I thought was interesting. In the state of Florida, there are more people that have died of the coronavirus that are 90 years or older than there are 65 years and younger. That's pretty amazing, and there hasn't been a single fatality in Florida among people who are 18 or younger. Those were all things that he said on the show today. He said that he thought that high school football, for instance, in Florida would absolutely happen. He's a pretty big sports fan. We talked a lot about college football. He also said the red carpet's open for MLS and the NBA, and said he thinks fans will be in the stands for sports this fall.
Clay, one of the things with the NHL's proposal and then ultimate layout for the postseason was, as of now, the intention is to test every player every day. First off, just in terms of money, how much money do you think that might equate to? And is this a precedent that other leagues will try to match? Or do you ultimately think the NHL won't actually test every player every day?
I don't know the answer. I do think that that the cost is probably not going to be that substantial, because my understanding is there are machines now that can do that within 45 minutes or something of that nature. So I think that the cost associated with this is declining precipitously. And really what you need is an immediate read, right? Testing people every day doesn't make sense if it takes 24 hours or 48 hours to get results back, because people can get sick in the time in which between when they get tested and when they get the results back, which defeats the entire purpose. I'm not concerned. I mean, when you look at the data, there is, you know, let's use college athletics as an example. In college athletics, you are right now more likely to be struck by lightning than you are to die of the coronavirus if you are under the age of 24. So in my opinion, this is a non-issue, right? You need kids back on campus. Some of them may well get sick with the coronavirus. You might need to tell people who are 65 plus, hey, this is not the year for you to instruct on campus. We're going to let you do it remotely. If you got janitors who are around that age, you certainly may not want them on a campus. And frankly, if there are coaches with ill health in the past, maybe this is a year where you consider telling them to try and coach remotely or be in different positions than before. But to me, the data doesn't reflect that young and healthy athletes are in any way likely to have substantial issues with the coronavirus. Not to say that something couldn't happen and that somebody couldn't get sick, but, you know, we know that Kevin Durant, Rudy Gobert, Donovan Mitchell in the NBA had this thing, and a lot of them had no idea they had it. I think people not understanding probability and risk is a big part of the response here, and why, frankly, it's disappointing to me that the NBA, MLB, NHL, and MLS aren't back already playing or at a minimum training to prepare for their seasons.
See, I think when they say test every player every day, it depends on what they're defining as a test. Like a temperature check upon entry of a facility is a type of test. So, I mean, that's one way they could do it. And if you have a fever, then you get the other test. Like, I wonder what all goes into that phrase of we hope to test every player every day that comes in. Like, because you're right. I mean, that would take a lot of effort, and it takes a lot of time right now to just figure out the results of everything.
Yeah, and it's more complicated depending on the size of the team, right? I mean, think about training camp in the NFL. I don't know. Paul knows the answer, but were there like 95 people when they theoretically start training camp before they do all the cuts? The amount of time that it would take to do 95 different tests of players every day as they enter into the facility, I mean, you're talking about either having to have like, you know, 10 or 15 people there doing these tests lined up, and then having all the players line up and everything else before they can enter the locker room. And then you got to test all the members of really have to test everybody that's going into the building at all, right? So it's not just the players. I mean, you're talking about hundreds of people being tested every day. It's a lot easier for something like the NBA, which only has 15 players on an active roster, compared to a big college football team, which has, I know, 85 scholarship players, for instance, plus probably 20 more walk-ons that are effectively members of the team too, plus all the student managers, all the people working in the facility. I mean, you're talking about hundreds of people showing up every single day at those facilities. That seems really time-consuming, unless you had, you know, and this is something that evidently a lot of different casinos are going to have. They have almost these entryways, I'm told, I haven't seen them, where when you enter a casino, they can tell whether you have a temperature or not, just by walking through almost like a metal detector. And so maybe that's a policy or a device that places could get. But I'm with you, Hutton. I think the devil is in the details.
So, Clay, with all the success of the match, the most watched golf event in the history of cable television, and the fact that you had Brady and Manning and Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods, is there a way to replicate that with someone that's got similar golf abilities, that has the rivalry, that has the star appeal of those two guys? Or is that something that you just do in perpetuity and maybe have that same event once a year and go all over the country to different courses and have those same four guys compete?
I think regular guy golf is a massively underrated interest level out there. And what I mean by that is, when you watch golf, if you're a golfer, and I'm a, you know, 100, you know, caliber golfer, and by 100, I mean, like, I'm happy if I break 100 on a golf course, keeping track of every one of my shots over the course of 18 holes, right? I am a weekend duffer. I'm an average golfer. I enjoy doing it, but I'm not very good at it. That's what most people are in this country. They enjoy golfing, but they aren't very good at it. And I think there are a lot of people who enjoy watching great golfers, but I enjoy watching a great golfer alongside one that's not very good, right? Like, I love the idea of getting to play around where Tiger Woods and I'm just using me as an example because I'm an average golfer, but where we have to alternate shots, right? Where, you know, I may top it and knock it 20 yards off to the right, and then Tiger Woods has to take my shot next, right? To me, that is really engaging and entertaining, particularly if the people you're watching are likable. So Charles Barkley's awful at golf. I'd like to watch Charles Barkley play a round of golf alternating shots with Tiger Woods. I think that would be really fun. I thought Tom Brady's thinking made television better than if Tom Brady had come on and been a phenomenal golfer. I'd like to see Steph Curry. I'd like to see Michael Jordan. I'd like to see a lot of famous athletes and or famous people. In general, I'd watch Romo. I'd watch Justin Timberlake. I would watch, average golfers. I'd like to see, heck, you know, on the SEC network, I think it would be fun to see SEC football coaches golf around, right? some of these guys, like I got to play a golf round last year with Kirby Smart. He and I were in a golf course for 5 hours together, in a golf cart for 5 hours together down in Birmingham. He was not very good, and I was not very good. We had an amazing time. But as we were doing it, I was thinking, you know, I bet there's a lot of people in the SEC that would find this entertaining to watch us alternating shots, cursing, being upset, every now and then hitting a good shot and exulting. Like, I would rather watch that style of golf, at least occasionally, than I would watch people who are incredible. Like, I always enjoy watching the British Open when golfers struggle and hit bad shots in bad weather conditions more so than I do watching, you know, golfers hit perfect shots all day.
Clay Travis from Outkick the Coverage, Fox Sports Radio, presented by thehomeloanexpert.com. Clay, thanks as always, man. Have a good weekend.
Hey, appreciate y'all having me. Everybody have a good weekend out there as well.
Take
Clay
care.
Travis, each Friday with us here on 104.5 The Zone. Coming up, we will discuss, I want to get back into the NHL, trying to test. Reading between the lines here, it could just mean you have the temperature check as a part of a daily test. But beyond that, they are going all in to ensure the health and safety of their facilities and the arena and the players. So in essence, because they're the first one we've seen, guys, this is a precedent of sorts. So how does the NBA follow suit? Major League Baseball? And this goes beyond just the leagues that will be in a bubble, so to speak. Think about college football testing, or the NFL, or high school testing. There's a lot of different ways to look at what the NHL released this week. It's the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Thanks for being with us on this Friday edition. Edley's, committed to giving you the same great food in a friendly and safe way. They are excited to open their doors at a limited capacity. And today, 12 South, Sylvan Park, Nashville-style hot pork from Edley's Barbecue. Always authentically Nashville and locally owned. Online, edleysbbq.com. So in regards to the testing, Chad, I was impressed with what the NHL released this past week in their plan. I thought they had a great week of news and information and PR, right? I mean, everything that was received by the fan base and the media and from the players, it all seems like it can work. So it also details their plan for testing and much more. And for me, it sets up a high standard, a high bar for the rest of these leagues to return. It will be I think it's going to be expensive to pull off. And I immediately thought of all of these smaller, non-Power 5 football programs and all of the discussion about the lack of money and funds to keep programs alive and the need for college football to take place. Where are they coming up with the money for these tests? From the NCAA, from the individual programs? There's a lot of small level programs that struggle day to day to make their budget work, and they're depending on football playing, and they haven't worked into their budget the cost for testing right now. I'm very curious with all of that.
And you still have to get these. That article you sent me the other day where I was behind on the testing availability still said the abundance of those tests that you were talking about are in 12 states.
Yeah.
So if you're a small budget college that's not in one of those 12 states, part of the expense is the geographic location of these tests.
Yeah,
so
but
your state might not have the abundance. You have to go get the test from somewhere else, which is another expense, right?
But with 12 states with the abundance, and if they're not being used and no one's asking for them, I don't know why you can't put them to use somewhere else. And two or three months down the road, there will be more than 12 states with an abundance of tests.
Right. But say you're in a state that doesn't have it and you're Idaho State or whatever, and you're talking about the expense of getting the test. Now, added expenses, I have to go get the test somewhere. All kinds of ripples in this that you're talking about budgetarily. And I think it's a huge issue.
The other question I have in regards to the NHL that I haven't read in sifting through those pages earlier this week is, let's say a player tests positive. They have a plan in place for that. the tournament will continue. That player will go into the 2-week quarantine, a self-quarantine. We know how that works. But how many positive tests for COVID-19 would it take to completely eliminate a team from postseason contention to where you say it's spread in this locker room, you're out? Like that has to be also considered and discussed behind the scenes and how it would affect the tournament bracket.
Yeah. And then that team they're playing gets a bye. And now you're talking about an asterisk season or an asterisk tournament if somebody just advances because the team they were playing has to bow out. And then the other thing Clay was mentioning, like, how long do the results take? If the NHL is testing daily, are you getting test results in 24 hours? Because if you're not, I'm testing you right now, Hutton. And tomorrow's test is the same time. Have I gotten the results from yesterday's test yet? Or am I testing you now and I'm still waiting on the results of yesterday's test and I get a result tonight that tells me what you were yesterday, and the timing is all funky as well.
Chad, pick up on this. All I can speak on in regards to testing is what the UFC did with 3 fight nights in 1 week. It was the week I was on furlough. So I don't know, 3 weeks ago now, they tested. They administered over 1,200 tests, and one test came back positive of all of them. So, it again, 3 fight nights in 1 week, to me, that tells me they got those tests back fairly quickly. Now, whether or not you believe all the reports is one thing. You could be the conspiracy theorist that says they made up, you know, all this stuff. But all the fighters said that it was done properly, and they felt safe. So, they got the results back fairly quickly, and my guess is, if you're high enough up the food chain, you can get your test back fairly quickly based on what I saw happen in Florida.
Well, is this necessary? I think is a logical question to ask also. Is it overkill to test someone every single day like the NHL is saying they're going to do to go through that process for college football teams? Is it necessary to test someone that's not showing symptoms that even if you have, let's say, the thermometer scan that you mentioned, Hutton, every time you go to practice, that if someone doesn't have a fever and they're fine, you have to start asking some logical questions about, okay, people want to make the show that we're doing everything we possibly can to be as safe as we possibly can, but also weigh that against what makes logical sense. And I don't know that testing every athlete every single day isn't overkill. But
well, what if you got an asymptomatic guy that's spreading it and doesn't have a fever?
It's a tough argument to make, though, Chad, if the professional leagues are doing it and the amateur sports say that. So if the colleges and the high schools say, yeah, it's overkill, but the NFL, MLB, and the hockey and NBA are doing it, that looks terrible from the NCAA's perspective.
Well, okay, but we're a business that's going to eventually go back to work. If we're not tested every day and another business is being tested every day, does it make our company look terrible?
Well, we're not skating around together. We're not putting our hands on
each other. There's a lot of businesses and work where you're going to be right next to someone every day. Maybe in a cubicle. It may be somewhere else. I mean, you're not sweating on them and you're not competing, but there's plenty of jobs that are physical where you're going to be right next to someone in construction or whatever it may be. So if one company tests every day, is every other company terrible for not testing every day?
Well,
I don't know that I see it the same way as you guys, that it's going to set some precedent where now metro high schools have to test their football and basketball players every single day because the NFL and the NBA is testing their players every single day.
I disagree with you. I mean, sports has a trickle-down effect for a reason, and sports is a different deal for a reason. They did away with touchdown dances in the NFL because they didn't like seeing little kids get in the faces of opponents and taunt them. I mean, it's got a huge trickle-down effect in a way that UPS doesn't.
I don't buy that.
Packages.
I don't buy that at all. Then why does every high school team not have multiple trainers for health reasons? Why don't they have indoor facilities for health reasons when they're out practicing in the rain?
They do the best they can to model the best things.
There's plenty of things that the pro athletes have and get and do that the youth ranks don't have.
You're making a jump now all the way to the youth ranks. Hutton was talking about
high school youth ranks.
Pros to college is what the conversation was.
We were just talking about high schools. I brought up the example of, and Hutton mentioned high schools.
Yeah.
That if the NFL's doing it and high schools aren't testing every day, then it's going to make high schools look bad. And I'm just simply saying there's plenty of things that the NFL gets to do and has safety precautions-wise that high schools will never have. And we're not bemoaning those things.
Agree with that. But the high school, the pro to college jump, I think Hutton's absolutely on to something.
What I'm saying is the NHL wouldn't have put that out there if they didn't feel it were necessary. So there has to be a big reason why that is such a huge issue for them as to why they're going to go about the daily test instead of, you know, the 48-hour or 4-day test or whatever they want to do randomly.
Well, I think it's building confidence, right? For one thing, building confidence in its players that it's going to do everything it can to maintain health, doing everything it can that one of these teams isn't going to have the kind of breakdown that you're talking about. And still there's the risk, right? What if the hot goalie is the guy who tests positive? It undoes a lot of the playoffs, whether a team's gone or not.
It does.
One player disappearing, the hot scorer, the hot goalie in particular, changes everything.
Coming up, normally, traditionally, coaches will get on here, players will get on here and tell us the year one to year two jump is where a pro player makes the biggest adjustments and really starts to make a turn towards a better, improved, polished player. With no offseason, what has it been like for a rookie last year going into year two this year? Titans linebacker David Long will be with us next on the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone. Midday 180. Glad you're with us here on 104.5 The Zone. We are queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Pleased to be joined by Titans linebacker David Long, 6th-round pick from last year's draft, headed into year number two at the linebacker position. David, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. How are you?
We're doing well. We were discussing right before you joined us what it must be like for a player this offseason, looking forward to a full offseason with their new team after being drafted last year and not being able to go to the facility or do certain things because of the social distancing and the self-quarantine that some of the states have been under. From your perspective, how difficult has it been?
I mean, it's been not very difficult. I mean, I'm still able to work out a lot. I got a lot of equipment that I've had to, you know, gather up here at the house. But I'm staying in shape. But as far as, like, you know, your daily maintenance is, as far as, like, the treatment room and, you know, massages, you know, like, chiropractic, stuff like that, it's not available to you. So you got to find people that, you know, can make house calls or even see if people still have their, you know, their stores open to try to get some work in. But, you know, I'm making it work just like everybody else.
Are you here in Nashville? And as things have opened up, have you been able to work out with some other guys?
I've worked out with a couple, not of my teammates, but a couple people from back home. But I am here in Nashville. I live like 4 hours away, so I go up to Cincinnati here and there, you know, to get some work in. Obviously.
What's the biggest thing? We know how good you've been in coverage already, and that you've shown. What's the jump they've asked you to make from year one to year two? And now with you obviously moving up in the pecking order for sure as the third guy.
As far as that new coach is far, he's telling me like my speed, you know, my change of direction, you know, keep working on those things, you know, as far as like going on from year one to year two, a lot of guys told me that's the biggest jump from year one to year two. So, you know, I'm trying to stay in the best shape as I can and, you know, go with film, you know, learn, you know, and relearn a lot of stuff that, you know, a lot of this time has taken off you probably to get some stuff here and there, but, you know, try to stay in the playbook and, you know, stay in shape is what I'm harping on right now.
What can you tell us about Jim Haslett? How have you gotten to know him through the Zoom sessions? What's he like as a coach, and how's he going to impact you?
I like coach. You know, he's a lot of energy. He's eager to coach us. You know, he's already got some jokes here and there, but I like coach. So I feel like it's going to be a good year for him.
Titans linebacker David Long with us here on 104.5 The Zone. Other than football, which sport have you missed the most with everything on pause?
I'm not gonna lie. I would say basketball, of course. That's the sport that I usually watch. I don't usually watch any other sport other than that. But basketball, you know, playoffs, especially you know, LeBron James. I'm pretty sure a lot of people miss seeing that.
Yeah, I know you're a big LeBron fan. Do you consider him the greatest of all time? And if so, did you watch the Jordan doc? Did you watch The Last Dance? And did it change your mind?
Yes, I watched The Last Dance. I watched every bit of it. And I'm definitely still going to say LeBron James is the GOAT. I love the competitiveness and stuff like that. But I feel like, I don't know, just me watching LeBron from, you know, since I was so little, I really came up and changed my mind about, you know, who my greatest long-time basketball player is.
Yeah, I was going to ask, is there anything that could possibly have 10 hours of Michael Jordan coverage in that docuseries couldn't change a LeBron James fan's mind that LeBron's the best ever? I don't think on the flip side there's anything they could do about LeBron James that a Michael Jordan fan who says he's the best of all time that would change their mind about that.
I definitely agree. And if you grew up watching two different people, I'm pretty sure all the old heads would say Michael Jordan is their GOAT, you know. But, you know, everybody has their own opinion.
David was like 1.5 or 2 years old whenever Jordan won his sixth title, for reference on all of that.
Consider me an old head because I say Michael Jordan's the greatest of all time.
David Long with us. Do you still box?
Yeah, I box here and there, you know, to stay in shape. Mostly when I go home. But as like, you know, with the COVID-19, like a lot of that stuff wasn't open back home, so I didn't really get that full experience, that training. But hopefully, in the time coming, I'll be back up and I'm able to, you know, go back to train.
I believe during the draft process or right after you were selected, you were on the show and you told us that your father once boxed Deontay Wilder. I may have my facts rearranged on that a little bit, but if that is indeed accurate, was Deontay Wilder like legit Deontay Wilder whenever your father fought him?
Yeah, that was when Deontay Wilder was really getting his name up, and my dad was at the end of his prime. So I didn't like that from the beginning. But you know, everybody knows how that turned out. He had 1,000 KOs. So
it was the gatekeeper.
Did you think that you would at the beginning of the season, did you say, hey, here's a team where I'm going to be able to get meaningful snaps late in the season or in playoff games, fifth round pick, plenty of them coming to the league and don't get that opportunity beyond special teams. But Mike Vrabel and the way he runs things, it's a system where that happens. Did you envision those possibilities, or how surprised were you as the season panned out that you got them?
Coming in, I didn't really know as far as like if I was gonna be able to get time or actually the defense. There was a lot of talk about special teams, so you know, I just took that in, you know, and ran with it. But when my time came, you know, I've always said my time come, you know, make the best of it because you might not get many, you know, plays out there. So, I was getting snaps here and there, and then Kansas City came in the regular season, and I got way more snaps than I usually do. And, you know, I made the best of it, and I just went from there. So the injury go down, the next man up. So, you know, you better be ready. So I made sure I was prepared whenever my name was called.
We haven't heard from Wesley Woodyard. We haven't heard much about Wesley Woodyard. Have you talked to him at all?
I chatted with him about a month ago, but it wasn't football related. I think, you know, he's still chilling with the family like everybody else, you know, working out. But football related, no, I haven't talked to that with him at all.
I did see a good time-lapse video of him putting down a stone path. Looked like a Florida house, him with his little boy. It's a very good project.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yep. And he's out of Florida.
How much did he help you behind the scenes last year?
He helped me a lot. He taught me, you know, a lot of vet stuff. So as far as like, you know, how to watch film, you know, what to, you know, as far as like how to, you know, take care of your body and stuff like that. You know, he eats different. Like, I want to say he's vegan, don't want to stretch it, but he's different. I really couldn't take that route yet. Hopefully I can get into it sooner or later. But, you know, he's been a long time in the league, you know, as far as, like, taking care of his body. So I want to be able to have that same durability in the league. So hopefully I can, you know, switch my diet over, you know, and take care of my body as well.
Four of us understand not being able to take that route. What would be the last thing for you to give up if you ever headed that vegetarian or vegan route? What would be the absolute last thing to give up as a meat eater?
What would I say? Probably oxtail, a lamb chop. That'd probably be the last thing I could give up.
Sounds pretty good.
It is lunchtime after all. David, thank you for the time, man. We appreciate the update. Best of luck this offseason and what's a very strange one to be sure. And hopefully we'll see you on the field this fall.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me on.
David Long, Titans linebacker, sixth round pick out of West Virginia last year, headed into year number two.
He's a good player, and promising player.
Yeah, I was, you know, pleasantly surprised because, Paul, you're right. I mean, those selections, you automatically think special teams. And that's, I mean, he had a big role on special teams. But towards the end of the year, and even in the Baltimore matchup, he came up with some nice plays for their defense.
And look, they're not deep at inside linebacker. He's clear cut the third. Who's the fourth? DeZubner?
Yeah.
And he played zero snaps at linebacker for the Chargers.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I'd have to look at a depth chart to remember who's still around. I mean, you're right.
People keep listing Nigel Harris as an inside linebacker. Nigel Harris is an outside linebacker, I believe.
615-737-1045, our number. In roughly 20 minutes, Stephen Godfrey will join us. We're going to hit the headlines through David Reed in just a moment. And then we'll kick off the second half of the show. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone.